It's the best time of the year. Football season.
Atlanta keeps it and runs. 20-15 to the 10 to the 5. Touchdown, Joel Lanning!
Your number one source for Cyclones football. It's former Cyclones talking Cyclones on CycloneFanatic.com.
Lanning out of the shotgun, looking to throw. He fires to the end zone for Daly. Touchdown, Iowa State!
This is Barely Audible with Jeff Woody, Zach Spears, and Austin Arnott on CycloneFanatic.com.
All right, everybody, welcome on into the final edition of Barely Audible this season. I'm former Cyclone offensive lineman Zach Spears, joined as always by the quarterback Austin Arnott and running back Jeff Woody. We're here. We're going to break down the loss last week. Seems like a week ago, because it almost is, on Thursday night to Oklahoma on ESPN. Cyclones lost 34-24. They'll play Kansas this week, and then back-to-back home games to finish out the year. That can't come soon enough and get us over to Hilton Coliseum. They finish the season at home against Texas Tech and West Virginia, both teams that can score. So those games will be interesting with our offense going up against them. So I want to talk about the Oklahoma game when we bring up offense. First, as I like to do in losses, Jeff, do you have any positives from this game?
Well, they competed a lot better than they have in weeks past. And I know that sounds weird to say, even though the margin of victory is not much different than it has been in prior weeks. But the things that they were doing, they did the little things a lot better. And they, even when there were mistakes, they were still covering them up with other guys making great football plays. Like the Wiltz tip to Justin Thomas interception, that play only happens because Wiltz, on his corner blitz, he goes underneath the fullback. Well, he loses contain out of the pocket. Well, Baker starts to scramble. If nobody flows over the top to keep him from scrambling, Baker runs for 15 yards. Well, Willie Harvey abandons his coverage because he sees that his guy's entered in blocking, which was the guy that was blocking Wiltz. So he, being a football player, leaves him to go play basically to stop the scramble, which makes Baker set up to throw, which means Wiltz can come back and make that tip. So little things like that were happening more this week than they were in weeks prior. It's just Oklahoma was too talented to do anything about it, especially when you lose. You're already down two running backs, and you lose the other one, and now you're going with Mitch Harder, who's a pretty solid blocker but can't run, and Kane Nwangu, who's a pretty solid runner but can't block. So you're down a couple cards, even though you're they're already stacked against you.
Yeah, Austin, what about you? What positives did you take from the game?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Jeff there. Competed hard, played hard to the final whistle. I mean, improved. I mean, definitely improved. I think going into this game, you know, Vegas thought it would be what? 20, was it 21, guys?
20 and a half, something like that. Yeah,
20 and a half. So, I mean, not that we go off of what Vegas thinks, but it's Iowa State has improved. They're improving. It is a lot better. And I saw a stat today from the great Kirk Howland.
Beast.
What's Kirk's Twitter handle?
K-Hall.
K-Hall 53,
yeah.
I think.
At K-Hall 53, yeah. Well, that's with two A's. So the Cyclones have lost six conference games by an average of 11.2 points, average margin.
Wow.
And that has only happened four times since 1960.
Wow.
There's been a smaller margin. So there's a positive to be taken. This team is a lot better than the team that I played on in 2008. This team is a lot better than the team that Jeff played on his senior year in 2013. What year was that, Jeff?
13.
Would you agree with that?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with this. This team's more competitive. They've got more talent. They're in more games. So this is not completely the end of the road. I mean, this team is improving. Although, like we've talked about in the past, the result has been L's, not W's. So that's where you look at it and you're like, okay, this sucks. But honestly, this team is improving. And that's everyone can see that. I hope everyone can see that.
Yeah, and my positive doesn't have to do anything with the – play on the field. Mine is the fans continue to come out, show out. My roommate who I live with, he's an Oklahoma State grad fan, he watched the game with me, and obviously he was cheering super hard for Iowa State because he hates everything OU, and he couldn't get over how every time he's ever watched Iowa State game or been to an Iowa State game that the place is completely full. And
oh yeah,
so shout out
and
to
that was a Thursday
Thursday, shout out to the fans. and because the fans have every excuse not to go on a Thursday, but they continue to come out and show support. And I know back when the three of us played, we loved it and couldn't get enough of it. And I know the staff and the players all feel the same way about that now. So I want to talk about some of those players now, mainly the quarterback. This has been an interesting situation all year long, and it continues to be interesting. I thought all three of us were under the impression that Joel Landing was the guy moving forward just, three or four weeks ago, and I definitely thought he was the guy.
Well, he's still listed as a starter.
But didn't Park start the game, Woody, mm-hmm. on Thursday? Yeah, he got his first mm-hmm. career. He got his first career start. So I want you two to break it down for me. Austin, why is he in over Joel? What does he do better than Joel?
I think what you're kind of starting to see with Iowa State, and this has been said before, they have packages. This is what they've wanted. They wanted from the outset. We knew that we were going to see two quarterbacks and see them frequently. So now I think what they're just trying to do is hone in on what guy does what best. So right now you see a lot more drop back, a lot of those move the pocket with Park, and with Landing you see a heavy run attack and one pass, so there is Jacob Park, there's no doubt, is the arm talent, the throwing quarterback of this offense, but it speaks measures that Joel Landing is still getting. He's still a captain of that team, and he's still getting ample opportunity to play on offense because he is that valuable, as you saw in that touchdown run on Thursday, that he's that valuable of a teammate and a guy that we need to have on the field because he brings a different dynamic to the field, which has helped this offense.
Jeff, what do you have to add to that?
So I think, and I don't want to use the term lost the job because that implies that Joel's not going to play regardless of dynamic, because I don't think that there is at any point this year has someone lost a job. I think they've found what they've done better. Now, I will say this. If you put a gun to Matt Campbell's head and said you can only play one quarterback, I bet he would say Jacob Park.
Yep.
Because the thing that he provides – is his accuracy and his arm strength and his release are all faster, more accurate, and stronger than Joel. Joel's also got a cannon too, so I don't know, that might be a push. Arm strength is a push, but accuracy and release time are a lot quicker with Park. Well, the thing that Jacob doesn't do as well as Joel is Jacob can't read defenses all that well. Like the really nice plays that he made, like the back shoulder to Dondre. Austin, you can confirm this. It was a one middle. It was a cover one, middle of the field safety. That was the wide, or that was the receiver to the wide side on the ball. So there really isn't much in safety interaction. So it's literally, I'm going to beat this corner with a throw. So it's not reading anything. So right now, what he does really well is he throws when the reads are simple. And I think, kind of subversively, one of the things that they're doing is they're trying to get Park a lot more reps so he can feel more comfortable reading. One thing that I've never done, and Austin, you can answer, is how hard is it and what do you have to do to actually understand what coverages look like when you're standing behind 6'6" dudes?
Yeah, never easy. And the one thing that, go back to Tom Herman. The one thing that Coach Herman taught me that I, will hold on to forever, the defense always has the chalk last. You can get up there, show your hands on the cadence, try and make the coverage roll. When I say roll, meaning from, maybe if there's two safeties, we call that middle open. If there's one high safety, you call that middle close. So when you want them to roll, you want them to roll from close to open or open to close, vice versa. But the one thing with that, the defense always has the chalk last. They can move late as they want to, and offensive football is hard. All 11 guys have to do what they are asked to do on every single play. On defense, one guy Von Miller can run off the edge and sack Cam Newton, like it happened in the Super Bowl. And that's a great play for the defense, and one guy can do that. One guy can intercept the ball. One guy can make a huge hit in the backfield if you're a linebacker and you read your keys correctly. Offensive football takes 11 guys. You can't just drop back with no pass protection and throw the ball deep. So what I'm saying is the defense always going to have the chalk last, so Iowa State has been doing a better job of giving Park simple reads, and I think he did a great job on that play you're talking about, Jeff. It was noticeably one high safety. The safety actually turns, and they're playing a kind of a fish coverage where they're trying to bracket the tight end or number three to the field, the third receiver. Actually,
naturally, you want to bracket Justin, or you want to bracket Chandler, because that's the threat that you have to take care of.
Exactly. So and then they run it, and they, yeah. And then they throw it backside to the beater route to Daly, which is a great pass, great read. So, I mean, but that's one of those things that should be ingrained in his head. This is where I'm going to go with it. So it's very hard to see defenses because, you know, at your vantage point, you're really looking at safety struggle. You can't look out there and look at the corners. I mean, you can't just look at the corners. You got to survey the whole field left to right to begin, and then just look at the safeties, and they tell you the picture. So that's the hardest part is trying to see over linemen when you don't know what the safeties are doing. So it takes a lot of gumption, and you got to have that quick. Like Park is very good with being quick with the ball. Sometimes I thought Lanning held on to it too much when he's trying to read stuff and looking to throw it. But Park kind of throws guys open and kind of negates that. So it's just tough, and these guys have struggled with it most of the year, but it's getting better now, I think.
Hey, awesome.
How long does it take?
Yeah.
I'm gonna just follow up real quick. How long does it take? Because when you're when you were a freshman, you're coming from Ames High. It's a different ball game because Park is coming from playing church league football after not playing for a year. So his reads are a lot slower. So how long does it take to, and is there a click moment? So like for me at running back, there's a click moment when you realize that I control what the linebacker does. I can tell him what I want him to do. There's a click moment for me that happened. And then after that point, I was like, all right, I get this. I understand what the run schemes are going to be. Is there a point, I guess, two questions is, how long does that take to get to a point where you understand what the coverage is going to be? And two, is there a click point that you had that you would expect to see Park have that, like, oh, I get it. This is what they mean by I've got to, you know, I have to do X or I have to do Y.
Right. And it's different with every quarterback. But I think in Park's development and what we're seeing out of him, it's coming sooner than later. I mean, he's still making some kind of not bonehead mistakes, but he's still making missing throws and, you know, throwing into coverage. So for me, I used to, you know, coming up, Coach Cotton used to make me, when he was offensive coordinator as a freshman, Coach Cotton used to make me look away during scout team because I would just copy everything that Brett did. I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to throw it to this guy. He was open when Brett threw it over there. That's kind of the learning that you have when you go in. You have, like, you know, I came from Ames High, obviously. Yeah, we ran the ball 30 times a game. I didn't know how to read a defense. I mean, I knew what cover two and those coverages looked like, but it's quite the curve. And you throw in blitzes and guys coming at you live. I remember, and you guys can attest to this too, Woody, because it sucks in the running back room if you can't count. Team blitz period used to be a nightmare for me. I'd be like, one, two, three, this guy is coming here, point these two. They got to, you know, it's just a lot. And
yeah, you
so
think
for
that
Park
sucks
right
for you.
Now,
you get protected. You don't have to hit anybody in blitz period.
Yeah, but I have to change the protection so that you can protect me. That's the hardest fucking part.
Or you could be just really, you could just be really bad at your position like me and not block anyone anytime.
There's always a way out of everything. We would chip that. The thing is, every quarterback's process is different, but I think with Park, it's going to come sooner or later because the number one thing that Park's getting right now that he has not had is game experience. You see looks over, I mean, it's football. It's defensive football. Every team plays a form of cover two, a two safety high defense. Every team plays a form of one high safety defense in certain situations. And every team blitzes and does stuff. So the one thing that I got great at, and Coach Herman was great with this with me, is finding tendencies. So every week, Coach Herman, and this is how he was, and this is how every offensive coordinator that I had was, the GA spent a lot of time looking at tendencies. So if Jacob Park really wants to be a student of the game and take it to the next level, he's going to think in his head, okay, it's 3rd and 12. I'm on this yard line on the left hash. They usually bring, you know, whether it be field Falcon or field blitz from that side of the field, you know, that type of recollection. It's a full-time job, as you guys know, being a football player. I remember being a quarterback and being in that film with the coaches 4 days a week and then with my teammates 3 days a week, and I still didn't, you know, you can never know enough at that position, I guess is what I'm saying.
Hey, Austin, so one thing I've always wondered about, and I think that I know the answer, but I think fans would like to hear this from you. As a quarterback, since we're talking about reading defenses, obviously you watch all week on film and you were prepared. You come to the line, you look at the defense, you know what the coverage is and what the linebackers and the defensive linemen are doing because you know what you're looking for and you know how to read that stuff. Once the ball is snapped, what reading goes on once the ball is snapped? Are you still reading the coverage at that point, or are you going through your reads and trying to make your play?
It depends on the play call, obviously, but in a drop back situation, a lot of drop backs are determined on, okay, if let's just say we're in a spread formation, so two receivers on each side of the formation. Let's just say we're in a spread formation, so everything's even. We're always looking for structure. So, like I said earlier, middle open or middle closed. Even when the ball is snapped, I'm still looking to see where the safeties have rolled to, or if they stay the same. So what I talk about now, say we're in spread formation, two receivers on each side. Usually what teams do in a drop back situation, and what we always did, you have a two safety beater side and a one safety beater side. So two safety meaning the middle of the field is open. Let's say we're in the middle of the field and the left is my two safety side. So if I see two high safeties, I immediately go that way and I read what the corner is going to do. Usually we're trying to high-low the corner or, you know, throw a whole shot to the outside receiver, read the high-low the linebacker. But think about it now, if I'm on the other side, so say I'm on the right side now with my other two receivers, and I have my one high safety beater, which is usually like your curl flat. Again, all we're going to do once we switch sides, whether it be the two safety side of the field or the one safety side of the field, we're going to read either corner or linebacker. So you got the shell determines it, and then you read the finer details, which is going to be the corner, linebacker, there's a defensive end that drops into that zone, and kind of put that against the play that you have. So there's a lot that goes into it, but there's a lot of similar concepts. So guys aren't all, you know, there's not always all these elaborate concepts. You guys know it. There's, you know, there's digs, there is curls, there's curl flat, smash, just very simple stuff, but people double call so they can have a choice if the defense rolls from one high safety or two high safeties, if that makes sense to everyone.
And to kind of to put another element on top of this, so to clarify on reads too, like depending on the play call, Park or whoever the quarterback is going to be looking, once he sees safeties, he's going to be looking to a different guy to be reading that thing depending on the play call. But what Austin didn't say at any point in that is protection. Because I think, and again, to correct me if I'm wrong, this is my understanding of what we're providing with you, is as you're looking at the defense, you kind of have to have a sense of like, okay, I'm protected. Generally speaking, these three guys are going to block these three guys. These two guys are going to block these two guys. Oh, we got nobody for this one. I've got to get rid of the ball before this guy gets here. And otherwise,
absolutely.
When you take a sack, if a guy gets lit up, it's because somebody missed a block and the quarterback wasn't even considering that was an option, because in his head he checked off like that defensive tackle is accounted for and blocked. So something that you didn't even say when you were talking about reads.
Exactly. And then you come from the shell, you come down to the linebacking core, and that's where you've got to think, okay, if I have a protection on, if we're sliding left, I know that if I have an extra guy coming off the edge to the right, that's a free rusher. So I'd obviously I try to get away from that rush because I know I have a quick throw to the left. So there's a lot of things that go into protection. That was always my hardest part playing quarterback, was understanding protections. Reading isn't that hard, but understanding protections, and if you've got – and you guys have always – everyone at home has seen Tom Brady walk up to the line of scrimmage and point at two linebackers or say, hey, 55's the mic. He's just identifying the center of the defense so they can slide the line either direction. So that comes into it as well. So it's a lot of stuff. Once the ball is snapped, you already have that preceived notion that, okay, the backers aren't walked up. I don't see much danger, so you go ahead and throw. But in the instance where you do see danger, you have the hot reads. And people always think hot reads is a joke, like from The Wedding Crashers, the movie. But it's actually a thing. If those two guys blitz off the edge, I'm going to throw a slant because I have no one to block those guys. That is a hot route. So there's a lot of things that go into it, and we're just seeing the infant stages of what Jacob Park can do. And it's fun to see guys like, you know, here's a perfect example. Thursday night we saw Baker Mayfield, a guy who is, I think, one of the best in the country at doing what he does. The reason he has 40-some touchdowns and only four interceptions is because that guy, he's one of those guys, and they always talk about the good ones. They are begging you to blitz them because they know you're going to come, and I'll throw a hot route and dice you up in a second. So I think Baker Mayfield was a good example of what Jacob Park could look like. I mean, if you go home, do your homework, and be committed to it all the time.
I want to get back to – so we've talked about Park. I want to talk about Lanning now. In a one-word answer, Jeff and Austin, I'll pitch it to both of you. I just want one word because I've got a follow-up question. Jeff, Joel Lanning, have we seen his ceiling as a college quarterback?
Yes. It was the Baylor game. That was his ceiling.
Austin, have we seen his ceiling?
Yes.
Okay, so everything I read with Joel Lanning coming out of Ankeny into Iowa State, they said he is the next Austin Arnaud. He's Austin Arnaud 2.0. He's Austin Arnaud in the flesh. He's going to do everything Austin Arnaud did. So without, you know, I mean, I'm no quarterback analyst here. I didn't play quarterback, but I would venture to guess, Austin, you never say this, but I would think so, that Austin was quite a bit better actual drop back in the pocket quarterback than Joel Lanning.
Well, here, let me.
Why wasn't Joel able to get to the level of being a good drop back college quarterback in the pocket?
Let me freeze you right there for a second. Joel Lanning had four offensive coordinators. This is his fourth season. This is his fourth offensive coordinator.
And that could be part of it. That's why I was asking, what caused this not to happen? Is that just because he wasn't able to, or was he stunted in growth? Because of the offensive coordinator situation.
From my perspective, I think it has a lot to do with the coordinator spot, because if I'm looking at what a quarterback does, we skim the surface of what a quarterback is responsible for in any given play. Like, he has to know exactly what his 11 dudes are doing, and then have a really good idea as to what the 11 guys on the other side are doing. And with Joel, when step one of that process of knowing exactly what your 11 guys are doing, when that's not there, it's really hard for you to get step one and step two, and then you have to understand what you're doing. So for me, I think Joel's always been kind of hampered by this, because Sam Richardson had the same thing. He had the same number of coordinators, that if you're not ever able to fully understand what you're doing, you always have one hand tied behind your back, because on a certain, and again, Austin, you can probably clarify this more, but like on a certain play, even though it may look the same on paper, where you got a dig by number two, you have a post by number one, and you have like an underneath route coming across the other side, that's a pretty simple 1-2-3 read. Well, different coordinators are going to teach it different ways, where you're going to look at a linebacker's hip, you're going to look at a safety's shoulders, you're going to look at the mic or the Sam. It's going to look at different things, and all of a sudden, Joel has to process all of that information so quickly, and he's got two voices in his head telling him to do two different things on the same play. So I think that's one of the reasons why he's been – Austin, or I think it was Zach, you mentioned it. He holds on to it a little longer than he should, because he's got so much shit that he's been told for 4 years that's not the same.
Austin, your thoughts on
I don't know if I, I don't know if I dis, I don't know I don't know if I'm going to totally disagree with you there, Jeff. I had three offensive coordinators, and I think the biggest thing – with Joel and the difference from me is my sophomore year, you know, Phillip Bates transferred early on in the year, so we didn't have anybody else. Like, I had no choice. I mean, there was no choice, but my junior year, I mean, obviously Jerome Taylor came in, but obviously Jerome was not ready. So I was kind of thrust into the job. I think it's kind of the reverse with Joel. Joel's always had to either fight for a spot or defend a spot. So that being said, when you're not winning a lot, like the Cyclones haven't in the past, that also comes into scrutiny. You want a quarterback that's going to win you football games. Well, it's not completely all on Joel. I mean, I think he was set up in the misfortune of playing in an era right now where he's played, where in him and Lazard, where they haven't been very successful. And they haven't been very successful because, you know, of this, that, and the other. But I think that plays into the thought process. And you get a whole new bunch of coaches coming in. And this does have to do with the coordinators. You get a whole new crew of coaches in who bring their own players, and that just so happens to be a JUCO quarterback who was highly recruited out of high school. So they want to give that guy every single opportunity they can. And we've seen now that Joel's role is going to be what it is. He's going to be a wildcat guy, maybe the occasional throw. But I think the more misfortune on Joel's end comes from just the team not being very good and not having someone to, like, completely put them trust in and say, yeah, let's do it. I mean, Sam Richardson will tell you, he got benched a couple times in his deal. So, I mean, it's just trying to find someone that's continually going to be solid and a system that's going to continue to work. And they haven't done that. So it'd be interesting to see how they go forward. I mean, I think like we thought about originally, I think they're going to play Joel Lanning until he leaves this university. So it's just, you know, who takes over then and can Jacob Park continue progressing as a passer and a thinker. I mean, the number one thing that's holding him back, like we said, has been his capability to read defenses and make big plays when they're there. And he's still young. So I'm interested to see, but I think Joel's lack of success can be credited directly to wins and losses.
I think the other thing that I'm while we're still talking quarterbacks, one of the things that I'm excited for a little bit, and I hope that they do this, is Joel threw one pass on Saturday or on Thursday. It's weird to say Thursday. He threw one pass on Thursday, and it wasn't necessarily that well drawn up. And I thought it was just kind of they hucked him out there, and they're like, oh, we'll throw it just to throw it. I think for me, he doesn't have to throw two dozen passes. He doesn't have to throw a dozen passes. He could throw six passes and complete five of them and still have like 150 yards. The reason being, a lot of times, you know, he's going to come in short yardage situations, but third and one, you've got, say, a tight end, a running back, and three wide receivers on the field, meaning you have a running back as a lead blocker, a tight end as a lead blocker, and five offensive linemen. Well, you get third and one, you convert that first down. You've still got your 11 personnel on the field. You can jet immediately into the next play, coming out of that first down with the same personnel and still run a full kind of gamut of your offense. And if the defense had run in their heavy package, then you've got a distinct personnel advantage with your full offense. And I think that's the thing, that's the situation or situations that I would be most excited to let Joel kind of cut it loose is you got a short yardage, you convert the short yardage, you keep the same personnel on the field, you open the offense all the way back up, ride that fuse till it dies, and then you run Park back in until the situation presents itself to bring back in Joel. So now that they've got more defined roles, I think you can kind of play with that better. But again, it's can they do it and will they do it is my biggest question for that thing.
Yeah, so we talked about the quarterbacks of the offense. I want to talk about the other main part of the offense in the running back, Mike Warren. He only has like 530 rushing yards this year. People thought he would be pushing to be an all Big 12 back. So my question to both of you guys, Jeff, you start us off since you played running back. Yeah. Has he come back down to the real world? Has he come back down to the real world, or is it just an off year? And I mean back down to the real world as in he's just going to be an average running back that has some good moments in him each year, but he's not going to be the all Big 12 level type back that he showed so much promise to be last season.
Well, I think for me, the thing that I've been disappointed with the most with Warren this year is consistency in his decision making. And I've talked about it before where he's never felt comfortable with this unit. And that, you know, again, I used that analogy earlier this season where you're walking through the house that you've lived in for 10 years. Yep. You can walk through that place with the lights off and you know where every, you know, damn carpet fiber is.
Yep.
But when you're not comfortable with it and you're brand new house, you're at your buddy's place and the lights are off, you're really slow to react to whatever is going to happen. Well, Mike has never felt comfortable in this offense, so his decision making has been poor. Where when I talked about that click moment where I finally realized, like, oh, if I take these steps in this direction with my shoulders set this way, I can tell a linebacker, you do this, and he's got to by his assignment. And I can control what he does and then respond off of that. So I hold the cards as a running back. That's what I always thought about it when I had this kind of full confidence. And I don't mean to say it's like literally, but the way that when I was looking at a front, because I could almost completely ignore the secondary. I didn't really care because once I get to that point, it's going to be so different from what it looks like now that it doesn't matter. So for me, I was basically looking at the front six, seven, eight guys and what are they going to do? And in my head, I was sort of seeing what, like, not play lines, but if you've ever been putting in golf and you can kind of like imagine the line that literally imagine the line that your ball is going to travel. That's what I would see with offensive linemen of being like, all right, these guys are going to travel to here, to here, to here, means I have to deliver this linebacker to this spot. I know how to do that. So I set that up and I was able to react off of what I wanted them to do. Mike doesn't have that. He's not comfortable right now in this situation. His physical talent is still very much there. That's how he's got 500 yards because the cat is really slick. I'm not comparing him to this guy from a level yet, but a guy like DeMarco Murray is, I think, his combination of it, where Murray is good in the open field, but he's not LeSean McCoy. He's a powerful runner, but he's not, he's not Jerome Bettis. He's good at pretty much everything, but not great at any one thing. And that's what Mike is he's just a solid running back with good feet, good pad level, good explosiveness. And what he last year made his money off of is running in what looked like butt-ass, wide-ass open holes because he set them up. He knew what he was doing. And that hasn't happened this year for one reason or another, whether it's mental, emotional, or physical. He hasn't been able to hold the cards at running back and say, this is what you're going to do as a defense.
Awesome. What do you have to add to that Mike Warren situation?
It's a lot of things, with it. He was early on had was banged up a little bit, but
I think more for Mike Warren, and we've always worried about this, is mentally. You know, I don't know where he's at mentally, so that's tough. When you're supposed to be the guy like he was, yeah. And you have two younger guys that are playing and making plays in front of you, I mean, there's nobody in the world, not even our best buddy A-Rob, could stay 100% confident in what he was doing if that was going on. So there's definitely some thoughts creeping into his head, but, you know, following Mike, knowing the coaches like I do and understanding what's going on in the program, I mean, that guy, they still trust in him. I mean, he's just, you know, just kind of in a rut. And it's not a bad thing for these Nuahu and Montgomery to be playing so well, because those guys are the future. I mean, we got to get them reps at some point. So it's not a bad thing nor a good thing. I just think it's kind of indifferent. We'd love to have Mike Warren doing Mike Warren things like he was last year and in a couple of games this year. That's just not the case. But I'm excited for the young guys. It'd be really fun. Before we get to the gambling segment, one last thought, Zach. I mean, we do play the Kansas Jayhawks this week. Iowa State's a double-digit favorite. I don't care about the spread, guys. Tell me one thing we have to do that's going to let us walk into Lawrence and get a victory.
First of all, they better be prepared to win, because as we're sitting here licking our chops like, yeah, we're playing Kansas, it's a good shot for a win, they're doing the same damn thing. So they better be ready to go in and play. Jeff?
They got to stop the run, because Kansas is – I mean, they're better. Coach Beatty's been doing a lot of good work to get them from the doormat – not even the doormat of the Big 12, the doormat that got left outside in the backyard.
And now he's got him in the cellar.
And now he's got him in the cellar, where it's just
moving on improvement. Up, like George and Wheezy.
Yeah.
They ain't great, but they're better. But the thing that they have done well, and they've done well since Charles Sims, was they've run the ball. And with Kansas, if you can – it's a team that if you force them to be one-dimensional, you force them to be zero-dimensional. So for them, they just have to make sure they stop the run. And if they get the run stopped, I think they have a pretty good shot of holding them to a really low point total. If they don't, and Kansas can continue to, you know, be a physical, keep this game physical and keep this game close, that there's a chance that this game gets back. But if they stop the run, they win this going away.
All right, man, to the best part of our podcast, why people listen to us, probably not why, but we're going to go to the gambling section.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Good roll, man. This table's hot. I want some of this money. Get me in this game. Come on.
Sir, you're aware that there's a $50,000 buy-in this evening?
If that's the case, give me $100,000 in chip. Let me have a Diet Pepsi and some hot wings.
Baylor's at home against Kansas. They win by 100 or 105?
And we have some games this week. College football, West Virginia fighting Dana Holgerson Mountaineers go to Austin, Texas. Texas is a 2-point underdog at home against West Virginia. West Virginia 7-1, guys. Do they get to 8-1 with an easy victory over Texas?
Yes. Give me West Virginia the points.
Zach's taking West Virginia.
Samesies. I think the thing that West Virginia does really well is they turn the ball over. What Texas does not all that great is they will turn the ball over.
Yep.
So in Austin, even though they're markedly better at home than they are on the road, I'll take the Mountaineers and the points.
Well, you guys are going to be wrong again. Woohoo. Texas at home, give it to me. They've only got a few more games, and Charlie Strong is going to be the head coach here, in my opinion. So they're going to play.
Is it going to be a Dan Hawkins situation?
Yeah, it might actually be. I mean, everybody loves Charlie Strong down there. Those guys, not fans, but players do. So the players are going to play hard for him. I think Texas covers and wins this football game on Saturday night. Because you want to know why, Zach? I'm going to tell you why. Because West Virginia ain't real.
They ain't real, huh? Hey, I rode the elevator up to the press box on Saturday with Dan Hawkins at the Illinois game.
Man, did you ask him if he was playing intramurals today?
I told him that thanks to him, my best friend blew out all three ligaments in his knee the game before his senior year, because this team was so
– Who is that?
Colorado got so fired up the 2 days after they fired him that they came out and beat the shit out of us that year. And then isn't your knee still laying on the 30-yard line somewhere in Boulder?
Yeah. There was an atomic bomb that went off my left kneecap, and there's still – you know, rubble and all kind of carnage on the sideline in Boulder where my knee used to be. Yeah. So
beautiful campus.
Yes.
Beautiful campus. Great place. I want to go back. Anyway.
To pick up the rest of your knee?
Yes, to get the rest of that cartilage. I'm going to need it at some point in my life. So moving on, LSU goes to Arkansas, and I mean, before I give Arkansas an intro, shout out Coach Rhodes. Can they do the, you know, remember I used to do the diet challenge, the office used to? We need Bielema to get in on the diet challenge.
Yeah.
They interviewed Bielema at halftime. He looks like he has cold cuts leaking out of his neck. Yeah.
And his wife's hot, too. His poor wife. She's hot, too.
Pound sign Vegas. hashtag Vegas. There you go. So we got Arkansas as a 7-point dog at home against LSU. LSU coming in heavy favorite at Arkansas. What do you boys think?
Give me Arkansas because I think Arkansas is going to win this game.
Hello. Hot take. What do you think,
Jeff?
I think
they're good. I think Arkansas is good.
I think this is coming out of an Alabama game. Arkansas, again, talk about a team that's demonstrably better at home than they are on the road. But Leonard Fournette, run ball will travel.
Yep.
Give me LSU.
Okay. Jeff, darn it, you're wrong again. I'm going with Zach on this.
Smart man.
And the main reason I'm going with this, Florida is not a great offensive football team. But one thing they do is they run the football pretty well. Arkansas held them to 12 yards rushing last week. 12, Jeff.
It's not Leonard Fournette, but
they also gave up damn near 500 to Auburn. So,
but that's the only bad game Arkansas played all
potato,
year.
Potato.
Exactly. You have a bad egg every once in a while.
They got killed Arkansas by Alabama, but everyone does.
Yeah, and I think LSU comes out sleepwalking. They're a large favorite after coming off a game where offensively they didn't do much, and you know they lost 10-0. That's a heartbreaker. They thought they could beat Alabama. So I think they're going to be sleepwalking in Arkansas. I don't know if Arkansas wins, but I think they cover the 7 points. So Jeff is wrong. AA and Zach are right. Okay, moving on. NFL here. Two NFL games. We have a close one here. Falcons go to Philadelphia and play the rookie Carson Wentz. It's a pick 'em as of Tuesday night at 9:22 Eastern Standard Time. Carson Wentz at home against the Falcons. Falcons have been good, but is it that break or bust moment for the Falcons, guys? What do you think?
Give me Atlanta.
Zach's on the Matt Ryan train. What do you think, Jack? I mean, Jeff.
ATL.
Wow.
The dirty south.
You guys are both wrong again.
Big offensive teams. They're just too sexy. I can't get away from a big offensive team.
They're not going to be sexy. Here's the thing. There's always a mid-year point where Atlanta's like, yeah, we're doing great, guys. We're going to win the division. And then they choke. They're going to choke. I think Philadelphia wins by two scores on Sunday. I think they come out and beat the tar out of them. Matt Ryan, what is he not, Zach?
He ain't real.
Hey, what'd I tell you? Okay. Chiefs-Panthers. Chiefs come to my Charlotte, Queen City, and are a 3-point underdog to a Panthers team who is 3-5 but have won their last two. Chiefs coming in as a underdog to Charlotte. What do you boys think?
So I have a problem because I still remember Carolina from last year, and I look at the roster and it's damn near the same, you know? So I keep thinking Carolina's going to get out of this funk. But now I keep hearing all these rumblings that Kansas City is going to be a playoff team over in the AFC. So give me Kansas City, but a part of me wouldn't be surprised if Carolina pulls this out and gets their act together.
KC. Jeff, what's your thoughts?
I'm KC? AFC West. Even though, are they going to be sans Alex Smith?
Good question.
Alex Smith is playing.
Okay.
He will play. He won't miss this one. He will play.
So give me the Chiefs.
You guys are awful today. You know that, right?
You're just picking them because you're in Carolina. Because you live across the street from the stadium.
I'm just picking them because Leonard Johnson is starting at nickel now. That's the only reason I'm picking
and
them.
He's playing really well, too.
And what happened last week when you spied a cyclone, Zach? The Raiders got in that ass. Sorry, Woody. The Raiders.
No, it happened.
It happened. So
hey, number 70 is pretty good.
Cyclones.
Number 70 for the Raiders is pretty good.
Gosh, that guy is KO. Let's just quick man crush break here. This guy, man, he is dominant. He is the best offensive guard in football. And
absolutely.
You don't have to go many places to find someone to argue with that. I mean, he left a team in Baltimore where Yonda was the best offensive lineman.
And now they can't run the ball.
Especially to that left side. So.
And the Pro Bowl is going to be so much fun this year, guys. The Pro Bowl is going to be so much fun this year. I can't wait.
I'll meet you in Hawaii, bro. Is that where they play that?
I don't know. I'll meet you there. I don't know. I'll just get the phone call from KO and then I'll know where I'm going.
Gosh. All right, cool. Well, okay, well, that's it, guys. I'm on the Panthers big time. I think the Panthers you know, they are a confident group. Their season is all but over. I mean, Atlanta has to lose a lot. They have to win 10 straight up, but the Chiefs did it last year. So can the Panthers try to win a bunch of games in a row? They still got to go to Seattle, which will be a tough one. They still got to go to Minnesota, but that's not looking too good right now. That's going to be it, guys.
Awesome. Guys, the past 3 years has been amazing with the two of you.
We're not done yet. I'm hanging up now.
I wouldn't want to talk Iowa State football with anyone else.
And thank you to all of you for listening to Austin, Jeff, and myself for the last three football seasons regarding your Iowa State Cyclone football. We really do appreciate it from the bottom.